Welcome, Rebels. Welcome to The Rebellion. This is Redacted on your Monday. I'm Clayton Morris.
I'm Natalie Morris.
So glad to have you here. And we cover the stories the mainstream media largely ignores, some that are redacted, including some of the documents and things we're going to be talking about today, which are redacted. We're going to talk about the war in Ukraine. It looks like, well, according to Ukraine, maybe they've launched their massive spring offensive, but the White House this afternoon is not so sure that what they launched was the big spring offensive. There's a lot of back and forth. Is it big? Is it small? Is this just a teaser? I don't know, but either
way. Can we sell this? Yeah, is basically the question they're asking.
But either way, Putin is like, all right, whatever. Okay, wake me when it's for real. So we'll cover that. We've got the latest on that today.
Plus, we have some new shocking data out of Canada about their assisted suicide program. Who's using it? How is that going? How is this different than the death penalty? I have a lot of questions we're going to get to. Also, the United Kingdom has hired what they call a free speech czar, which is great because while they're doing that on the one hand, on the other hand, they are paying AI companies to spy on you. So yes, say what you want. They will watch you do it.
Yeah, we're gonna appoint a free speech czar while we're spying on you. Because that's how we roll. Also, a billionaire is taking on the United States' woke school system. Wait till you see the two new schools that this billionaire has created that are anti-woke and keep your gender ideology out of our kids' school life and farm-to-table food instead of that processed crap they serve American kids in the school system. We're going to interview Layla Centner about these two new schools and what she's doing to upend the school system. All of that and more as Redacted starts right now. You're laughing over here, chuckling about something.
I'm just watching your comments about
People are like, oh, yeah, he's got a lovely sister. No, this is my lovely wife, Natalie. This is my lovely wife. Hey, it was great. We got to hang out with the lovely George Galloway yesterday.
Yes.
And his lovely wife. And so it was a lot of fun to hang out with George. I mean, there's very few like independent journalists out there who are doing the kind of work that George Galloway is doing. But we had a lovely evening with George. And so shout out to George. I hope he's watching. Anyway, we just wanted to say, I don't know. It was great.
It was great. Yeah, it's nice because, you know, Clayton and I, we do this job and it's just the two of us and we don't really know how we interact in the world with other people. And you know how when you meet an internet friend and you're like, how's this going to go? Is it going to translate right. in real life? And it did. And that's exciting. So,
yeah, we were on his show and it was great. It was great to be in the flesh and see George anyway, and his lovely wife. So anyway, we had a lot of news to get to on this Monday. A lot of moving pieces. And so we are going to tell you about all of that. But first, let's tell you about our newsletter. We do have a daily newsletter, which is totally free. And the way that you sign up for it, we really try to bring you a lot of value with a newsletter. Like you can read it in about 5 or 10 minutes. And we cover about, you know, 3, 4, 5 big stories of the day. And it's, you know, again, you can read it over your cup of coffee. The way to sign up for it is to go to our website, redacted.inc. It's not .com. .inc, put in your email address, and then you'll receive a welcome email. You need to verify your email, though, so it might go to your spam folder, your junk folder. Just click verify, and then tomorrow morning, first thing in the morning, around 7 a.m. Eastern time is when we publish the newsletter, and you'll receive it in your inbox. So if you're a new newsletter subscriber, Tuesday will be your very first newsletter, and we put a lot of heart and soul into it. So,
yeah.
Yes.
One of the things I think we have in common with shows like George Galloway is that I came up with this tagline. Let me know how you guys think of this for our show. Is we are non-pacifist peace extremists. Is that catchy? Do you like that?
Just flows off the tongue.
Non-pacifist peace extremists.
Non-pacifist peace extremists. I'm trying to think of an initialism for that.
What do you think, David? Is it catchy? Is that going to catch
on? It's catchy, but it's like, it's one of those things that no one will know how to spell, because pacifist is one of those words that you're just like, how do you spell that?
All right. I may not be onto something. Like, if you've ever watched 30 Rock, that's like the rural juror. Okay.
Here's the name of our new movie. It's the Rural Juror.
That's a joke. Did you ever see that 30 Rock episode? Okay. I won't explain it.
All right.
Okay. Let's get to some serious. We're gonna when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're gonna see some serious shit.
When is that gonna happen? Because it seems like Zelensky thinks
right
that
now.
Oh, it's happening right now.
Right now.
Sure.
Okay.
Okay.
Russia says that Ukraine's spring offensive came and went, and no land was lost on the Russian side. But the Wall Street Journal this weekend basically published this whole big hug to Zelensky, where he allowed in a 10-minute video, basically says, we got them right where we want them. Watch.
Постійні заклики з цього радянського паркану, що немов ядерна зброя. Все це, всі ці наголоси людині слабкої, і діяти так потрібно. Загнаний звір, він боїться втратити своє життя. Він повинен боятися силу світу. Він
Okay.
So propaganda, Wall Street Journal. And I love in this piece too, and I don't know if it will play it, but like she says, and now the spring offensive is about to begin, what the world has been waiting for.
Well, she says we are on the eve of the spring offensive.
What the world has been waiting for. What world do you live in, state-run media, that you've been waiting for this?
That you're hoping people will die and you're excited about escalation of war?
It's what the media is waiting for, so that they can make money off of it.
I'm interested in this changing rhetoric of the Wall Street Journal, and we're going to talk about this in a second. Later, he goes on to say, we don't know how long it will take. He says, we need real concrete support from the European Union. Real concrete support, not just I like this screen. He says, not just blah, blah, blah. No blah, blah, blah. He's done with that. He wants Europe to give them real promises, real security, real weapons, real plan. That's just the translation that the video gave. No blah, blah, blah.
So just to be clear, Europe, the United States, we haven't given them real weapons yet.
What we've given him, in his words, is blah, blah, blah.
Is blah, blah, blah. So he and Greta Thunberg are hanging out.
What?
Blah, blah, blah. That's her thing. That's her catchphrase.
Okay.
No more blah, blah, blah.
Okay. No blah, blah, blah the West.
Yeah.
So all of the money that we've put up in taxpayer money has just been blah, blah, blah. And he wants no more of that. Now, what he's saying here is that the world has to choose. Either they give Russians visa and legitimacy as people. He keeps mentioning this visa program. You cannot talk to Russians. You can't do business with them. You basically cut them off as people, full on Russophobia, I guess, full stop, or you are all in Ukraine. You can't have it both ways. Now we have to choose. Kind of like Japanese concentration camp is what I hear from this, right? Like you see someone Russian, can't give them a dollar, can't give them a passport, can't give them a visa, right? Is that what you're hearing from this?
Yeah.
Is that an awesome way to handle international conflicts between races? We should have learned that.
Take away their religion, take away their language, take away their books.
Yes.
Lock them up. Oh, and then also bomb them.
Right. Again, if he had his way, that's what he would have. But according to Russia, he's not going to get his way because this is how the spring offensive has started and maybe ended. We're not sure if that was it. It was a sort of blink if you'll miss it type thing. Russia says that Ukraine mounted an attack in at least 5 places. Here's what the Institute of War says about the fighting that happened. It has these green circles. If you can see that on your screen, I'm sorry, it's small. This is where the fighting intensified along the lines. And here is Russia's summary of how that went. Ukraine's army offensive attempt failed. Came and went, they say. They announced that the armed forces of Ukraine lost. Now, I don't want to minimize, because here is a number here of real deaths. 250 people died that did not have to, right? They say Ukraine lost more than 250 personnel, 16 tanks, 3 infantry fighting vehicles, and 21 armored vehicles. Here is from Russian state media on RIA's Telegram channel. This video purports to show Russia destroying Ukrainian equipment. in this area. So did it start or did it? Or did it not?
Did it not? I mean, this is the question, right? So this is the question that was asked of John Kirby today at the White House. He stepped in. Of course, you know, John, the heavy-hitting Jean-Pierre had to step aside so you could ask some tough military questions of this. And the room was actually pretty packed for an early summer day. Here's John Kirby. Did the offensive start or not? Give us a straight answer.
What is your understanding of whether the counteroffensive has begun? Has it begun?
I'm not going to be talking for the Ukrainian military. That's for them to speak to. And I think you heard them say earlier today that they're conducting some offensive operations, but I won't go beyond that. That's for them to speak to. What I can speak to is how hard we work to prepare them to be ready. So whether it's starting now or starting soon or whenever they decide to step off and whatever they decide to do, the president's confident that we did everything we could over the last 6-8 months or more to make sure that they had all the equipment, the training, the capabilities to be successful.
Got to be starting something, right? You got to be starting something. I said you want to be starting something. You got to be starting something. Are you starting something?
It's too high to get over.
You got, I mean, it's very good. I was waiting for that. Like, is this starting?
You love to get under.
I'm not going to say it. You want to be starting something? I don't know if it's starting. I'm not going to speak for them. This is a time when I won't speak for them. Today's the day. Otherwise, we always speak for them because we are literally running the entire operation there. So I don't know is a pile of shit. You are lying right to all of those reporters in the room that you don't know. We are running everything. Everything comes out of Washington and the intelligence community. You, sir, are full of it, and you're lying right to the American people when you say, we don't know, I'm not going to speak for them. I know they did some offensive stuff, but all I know is we got some weapons over there. That's all I know.
Okay.
You're a liar.
Yeah, I mean, they speak for them when it sounds good. Like, if it went well, we absolutely would speak for them, right? Oh, yeah, we did that.
Victoria Nuland last week, on the show, we featured how she admitted we've been planning the sprint. We've been planning everything with them for 4 to 5 months. So you don't know anything? And people sit back and CNN, no one will push him on this. CNN will just run this crap. They'll have him on his team. They'll interview him and he'll just say the same stuff and no one will push him on
this. Okay, but let's watch this a little bit of a changing narrative from the Western media because I'm interested in this. Meanwhile, Russia continues to experience attacks inside its own borders. Here is reports today that 2 drones fell on a highway in this Kaluga region, which is just south of Moscow, the metropolitan area. There were also reports of more Ukrainian drones inside of Russia this morning, but no one was hurt. And there are reports of more attacks in the Zaporizhia area that we've been warning about. The nuclear power plant is there and everybody is worried. And Ukraine keeps stepping up those attacks. Now, Russian historian Gilbert Doctorow, I was reading his book this weekend, and he said this about the attacks inside of Russia just before the weekend. He says this is the spring counteroffensive. He says these attacks inside of Russia, this is it. It's the action, he calls it, of a spent military force which cannot engage the Russian armed forces on the battlefield. Evidence of Russian television suggests that day by day their advance west from newly conquered Bakhmut area is proceeding relentlessly. He says the entire line in Donbas is pushing back the Ukrainian forces, which have not brought into play their much-touted Western tanks and top supplies, since they would be destroyed for lack of air cover and for lack of the munitions that the Russians have been systematically eliminating through missile strikes on weapons caches over the past several weeks. He says, meanwhile, the Russian talking heads are paying close attention to President Biden's fall on the podium yesterday during an awards ceremony and finding it utterly shocking that this senile creature holds the fate of the world in his unsteady hands. Now, what he's talking about is this tumble that our elderly president took this weekend. And of course, this is concerning, not because, you know, it's fun. Not at all to poke fun, but because we see the sort of frailty of a man who is at the helm of this, who could stop it, right? But doesn't look like he's in control enough, not just when he moves physically, but when he speaks. I think it feels very much like we are children and we don't have reliable parents, right?
And he gets up and he points over to the ground like, you know, oh, what's that over there? We all, you know, like, what's that? That was that flat area's fault.
It's fine. We all trip, you know, I do all the time.
Former White House doctor, though, today said, look, he's clearly a man who is not fit to be president, mentally and physically. He doesn't know where he is, and he's leading us into World War III. So regardless of, like, you know, his politics or anything else, this is the guy who literally can call the shots for furthering or escalating a war into a war with Russia.
Yeah. Now, is Zelensky worried about Joe Biden? Maybe because he's old and frail. He says in this Wall Street Journal piece, he's more worried about him because he's been more supportive of him than President Trump was. Watch how he lays out this this strange story of A Tale of Two Men.
Biden, він президент в час повномасштабної війни. І він допоміг більше нам, чим президент, коли був Трамп. І якщо ми говоримо про адміністрацію. Але при цьому ми повинні розуміти, що тоді не було повномасштабної війни. І я не знаю, як би діяв Трамп. Я не зрозумів, чому Дональд Трамп казав, що я б за 24 години посадив би Путіна і Зеленського, двох президентів, і завершив би війну. Ну, він міг тоді це зробити, коли він був. Ну, цього не відбувалося. Так, питання було, напевне, не таке гостре тоді, тому що не було повномасштабного вторгнення, якщо аналізувати. Але тим не менш, а були...
Okay. Now, I think it's interesting that we're starting to see this admission that there has been conflict since 2014. This is something the mainstream media has sort of ignored for the last year and a half. And now, last week, the Wall Street Journal had an editor saying that Ukraine has been fighting Russians since 2014. He's saying they were occupied, although they were occupied in those regions by ethnic Russians, which he said these were our people.
Well, I think he might be referring to Crimea, but yeah. Being occupied Crimea.
Okay.
You know,
so talking about this like ongoing conflict outside of Crimea is sort of a new narrative, almost like, yeah, it's been going on there for a while that we have not seen admissions of. Now, this logic is flawed, though, because he's saying, why didn't Trump bring Putin and I together when he was in office? He had the chance to, but there was no conflict, but he could have. But we didn't have a conflict. It was strange. It doesn't follow, right?
Right. Yeah, you're right. It's a good point because he's saying basically, I don't know how Trump would have reacted because we didn't have a full-scale war, but we had conflict and he didn't bring us together. He didn't bring us to the table. Here's the thing. The United States, of course, and others were trying to bring them to the table. There were people that were trying to bring them to the table and they were at the table.
Absolutely.
So we had an opportunity to bring, they were sitting at a table.
Yes.
In Turkey.
Yes.
Talking peace.
Right.
And we stepped in and stopped peace talks.
Right. And actually, you know, people who specialize in Russian history have been saying this for the last more than one decade, that there is no future in Ukraine without Russian participation. So this is not like, oh, all of a sudden we think those countries are intrinsically connected. But now, you know, given that this spring offensive may have come and gone, this may be it. 250 lives lost unnecessarily. Now, would this mean the Biden administration can have a chance to bring Zelensky and Putin together? No, because the United States has specifically said they won't. Over the weekend, U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken specifically, look at this headline, warned against peace. Can you believe someone would write this headline as something to be proud of? He's warning against peace. And the way that this argument plays out is we just can't let him have his way. Like, you know, if my son thinks that he can cry after every meal to get a cookie, he's going to get, you know, then we're all going to be screwed because he thinks he can get his way. This is the way this argument, like he's a toddler. Here is this quote saying a ceasefire that simply freezes current lines in place and enables Putin to consolidate control over the territory he seized and then rest, rearm and retack is not lasting peace. It will legitimize Russia's land grab and reward the aggressor and punish the victim. So again, I think it's worth looking at the map because the U.S. continues to warn us that Putin's just going to keep going. He's just going to keep taking over more and more of Russia, right? When we have a map of what Russia is trying to accomplish here, let's look at the map again. The live map from just taken a few days ago, the gray area here is where these borders now lie. These are the people who voted to become a part of Russia, who asked for Russia's help, and this is where Russia says they will stay. Are they lying to us? We don't know. But the West is telling us, no, they're going to just blow right past it and keep going. We don't know, right? We're being told that they will keep going like the Mongols. But by buying into that lie, we're being asked to sign off on people's death to continue to fight, to push them back. And you can see clearly with this map here, Ukraine is not going to push that red back. They're not, right? How is that possible? This is a Financial Times map that you're looking at now, which has Crimea as contested territory, the one we just looked at before. You know, again, I think it's worth noting that the United States has been lying to us about conflicts so often for at least the last 30 years. We have weapons of mass destruction, gas attacks in Syria. Shouldn't we be questioning this narrative about, you know, Russia is going to keep going past those lines? Shouldn't we at least question it, whether you like the idea of it or not? You know, speaking of lies, this weekend I was reading this article that I had not been aware of before, which was published in the New York Times. Look at the date on this article. September 11th, 2013. Look who wrote it. President Putin. The New York Times gave him the opportunity to make a plea against U.S. attacks in Syria before the Obama administration launched them. And it reads like a prediction of what would eventually happen in Syria. He's warning that the gas attacks may not have happened by the Syrian administration. That turned out to be true. He's warning that the United States aggression will reverberate in more terrorist attacks. That turned out to be true. I'm not advocating for his side of anything, but I'm telling you that this war in the Ukraine is based on a lie, and we should know better than to trust the State Department, which has been lying about wars repeatedly, and maybe just think there may be a possibility for peace here. That's what I'm saying.
It would be nice. And it's amazing that these predictions come true. I mean, it's amazing to look at some of these, you know, these things that he said over the time. Watch, you know, watch some of his famous speeches, read some of the stuff that he's put in this New York Times piece. I would encourage all of you guys to go read this piece, because what he said about Syria was spot on.
Yeah.
And now we know the cover up at Douma, the fake, you know, the fake chemical gas attack, of course, which has now been widely debunked and discredited. Aaron Maté has done an amazing job on this, debunking this. But
yes.
So, yeah, I think it's worth, and to talk that you don't want peace, you're not interested in peace. Like, that's Antony Blinken's legacy. So he'll come home tonight at dinner. Honey, what'd you do today? I talked people out of killing each other. You know, the 250 Ukrainians who died because of being thrown into the meat grinder for some pointless political war right now. That's exactly what we're facing.
Yeah. And so, you know, the more I study into this, the more I realize, okay, this, we're not being told the truth about, you know, Russia's intentions. And I know for a fact the United States continues to lie about wars in order to escalate. And so it's very confusing because the Western media continues to tell us that Putin is such a bad guy. And that, it just doesn't calculate inside of your brain if you're someone who, you know, follows Western media. So what I'm saying right now is we need to sort of stop and think, you know, where's the nuance here that we're missing and people are dying while we're missing it?
That's right. All right, we've got more news to get to on this Monday night, including a little story that I want to stick in here, which I think is incredibly important. Many of you are asking us to talk about it, and I can't pass up an opportunity to talk about it, which we will in a minute. So, Philip, add it to the rundown. We're going to talk about this UFO whistleblower from the military that has just come forward. Unbelievable. And we will get to that in a moment. But we're also going to talk about Canada. Canada has gone off the rails with their MAID program. Their assisted suicide program is breaking all kinds of records. They're now the world leader in assisted deaths. Way to go, Canada. Is that what you hoped for? Because you've won it. And we're going to talk with, we've got a lot to get to. Anyway, but first, there's this. Oh boy, our friends over at Moomoo have an amazing deal just for the month of June. Guys, would you like 17 free stocks? Would you like 15 free stocks plus perhaps a Google or Tesla stock? And on top of that, a free AI stock? That's right. That's what Moomoo is doing right now. That's 17 total free stocks. With Moomoo, my favorite trading platform, there's no steep learning curve. It has a simple interface. It's easy to use. So even beginners can take advantage of the stock market in no time. And right now, they are giving away these free stocks when you open your account and you make your initial deposits. To learn more, check out our link at redacted.inc/Moomoo. That's M-O-O-M-O-O. They are a massive company, and Moomoo has zero commission trades, and the app looks amazing on every platform, from iOS to Android to Windows and Mac. Moomoo can help you trade with its advanced tools like their stock screener and their earnings calendar. No matter what your skill level is, you'll find fantastic tools that can help you trade. I absolutely love trading with Moomoo. That's where I trade a lot of my commodity stocks. So get access to zero commission trades and 17 free stocks, which includes a free AI stock and either Google or Tesla stock for a total of 17 free stocks when you make your initial deposits. So even if you never do anything else with this account, you just open it, make your initial deposits, you get these free stocks, and let them grow. Again, go to redacted.inc/Moomoo, the website, once again, to get these free stocks and open your account today is redacted.inc/Moomoo. All right, well, let's talk about Canada. Let's head up to our friends to the north and talk about what's happening in Canada, because we've getting some troubling data out today about the number of doctor-assisted suicides in Canada have skyrocketed under Trudeau's leadership. This is Trudeau's legacy. And now prisoners are tapping into the law there in order to leave prison early, if you know what I mean, by using this MAID program, the assisted death program.
Check out
early of prison. We'll get to that part of the story in a minute, but first some context here. So in March of 2021, the Trudeau government in Canada passed the Medical Assistance in Dying Act, known as MAID. Under the law, you don't have to have a fatal condition, of course, or a terminal condition. In fact, under the law, you could just be poor and want to kill yourself. So you don't really have to have any reason other than that. And they've been helping people do that. You're too poor to pay your bills? Why not just check out? It's time to check out. You could also have a mental illness. That will qualify you if you want to as well. Be depressed, want to kill yourself. You can do all of that. And the law allows doctors to help you do it gladly. Since the law was passed, medically assisted deaths rose by 35%. And this is the most recent data from 2020 to 2021. We're still waiting on the updated data because I bet it's going to be shocking. Medically assisted deaths in Canada rose by 35% from 2020 to 2021. Why is that exactly? Well, why have they skyrocketed? Well, could it be maybe the television advertising campaigns? Like you're sitting there watching a ball game, you're like, I'm feeling pretty depressed. And then a television commercial comes on like this, kind of encouraging you, you know, you've been pretty depressed lately. Why not you just, check out, watch.
Last breaths are sacred. When I imagine my final days, I see bubbles. I see the ocean. I see music. Even now, as I seek help to end my life, there is still so much beauty. You just have to be brave enough to see it.
Yeah. So she's no longer with us. And now the rise in medically assisted suicides, according to this data, may partially be explained, according to this report, by a greater awareness of MAID as an end-of-life option in Canada. You think? There's television ads.
These numbers are kind of shocking because you would think that there would be a higher rate of rejection. Because when you look, it says about 12,000 requests were made, resulting in over 10,000 medically assisted deaths in the same year. So there's not a high rejection rate all. You just write in and you get it. That's
over 81% approval rating for when you sign up for this, an 81% acceptance rate. 81%. And, which we'll get to some data here in a second, which is even perhaps more shocking. The CBC, which is the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, is also littered with propaganda articles. If you go to their website, you can find plenty of them, promoting the MAID program. This would be like America's PBS, home of Sesame Street. Same thing, CBC, PBS, basically. Publishing articles promoting assisted suicide. Here's one from a few weeks ago, or maybe more like NPR, I suppose. Here's one from a few weeks ago complaining about the delays in rolling out the mental health provision in Canada, where people without any fatal disease can ask to be put to death. So here's the CBC basically saying patients left frustrated amid delays to access assisted dying. Those seeking MAID because of a mental illness have to wait until at least 2024 for that to roll out. Now look at this photo that they used in the article. And look at the hand, right? That hand has a finger, which is in, or there's like a, what do you call it?
An IV
in the arm, right? So this person is in the hospital.
Yeah.
right? Well, that's not what the article's about. The article's about mental illness has nothing to do with an old person in the hospital with an IV. So what they're even using propaganda photos, and even if you read the under part of that photo, many Canadians who suffer from mental illness that their doctors have been unable to successfully treat have had to wait for medical assistance in dying as the government delays MAID expansion. That's not what this is. This person isn't here in a hospital with an IV because they're depressed. They're there because they're elderly and they've got some affliction.
Sure.
So this is the propaganda that the CBC is using to drum up sympathy for these people.
And it's specifically talking about people with mental illness?
Yeah, that's what these delays are for. So what the article is specifically about, mental illness. And those who would get the, you know, get assisted suicide later on because of this program.
That their doctor, and I'm troubled by the phrase, have been unable to successfully treat, because by many measures, a mental illness can persist in a lot of kind of ways that you can't slap a metric on. So you can say, like, you may never feel better.
Right.
Therefore, right?
Right.
And so what are the way that we're defining success here?
Yeah, like we've tried all the medicine, we've tried all the antidepressants, we just haven't been able to treat you, so time to check out. We've even covered the eugenics program on this show, the new eugenics program. Many people wrongly believe that the government-assisted eugenics program ended after World War II, and it didn't. It's alive and well with just a bit of rebranding in 2023. As we've talked about on this show, this all has its roots in Malthusian policies. Thomas Malthus was an English cleric who believed in population control, the idea that the world can't handle so many people. There's Thomas Malthus. It gave rise to the eugenics program in the early part of last century. The American eugenics movement embraced negative eugenics with the goal to eliminate undesirable genetic traits in the human race through selective breeding. This was literally a government program in the United States. Basically, the United States would push you off into camps where you would be sanitized, killed off, never to breed again. PBS has speaking of PBS, they actually have a whole documentary about the eugenics program back in the day. You should seek it out if you want to see it. The World Economic Forum loves this. And of course, Trudeau is one of Klaus Schwab's young proteges. So of course he's in on this. Today we learned that the funeral homes in Canada are also getting in on this business. This is amazing. So you don't even have to bring the body in separately. It's just all right there.
It's just efficiency.
It is. Look at this. This is the headline from another CBC article. Man, they're really pushing this tough on cbc.com or .ca. Quebec funeral home offers space for families to gather and say goodbye at assisted deaths. This is yet another CBC article promoting assisted suicides in Canada. In Quebec, you can use the back room of the funeral homes, and then, of course, the funeral home can make money off of the process, too. Like, you're already here. Are you going to go to another funeral home for your embalming services? You just died in my funeral home. So it's kind of like...
you don't want to put a carbon footprint on the, you know...
Yeah.
If I have to drive you from the hospital to the gravesite, then, you know...
It's wasting. It's like software as a service. Like, once you become the software provider... Like someone else is not going to go out and like find another saw, like they've got it, right? So like it's lock in. It's like money lock in. The body is already here. So they're going to make money off of it. And it's all neat and tidy right there inside the building. They even sent a CBC reporter to the funeral home to see the room where it happens. Watch this.
Welcome. Follow me.
Funeral homes have been in Mathieu Baker's family for generations, but he recently expanded the kind of service he offers.
So this is the room where you have the medical aid in dying?
Yes, this is where it happens.
People who are approved for medical assistance in dying can come here with their doctor and loved ones to end their lives at a cost of at least $700.
It's a lot of organization on our part to really make it a respectful and meaningful event for that family.
It's what Michel Brunel recently opted for. His family says he had emphysema and his quality of life had deteriorated, but he didn't want to die at home or in the hospital.
They're using a room that they have already, decorated it very nicely, allowed us the time we needed to do what we had to do, to say goodbye, let him get comfortable. It's just a beautiful option.
Yeah, it's just a beautiful option. So if that's not enough, now prisoners are being asked, they're asking to be put to death under this law. So it's kind of, it reminds me of the trans stories we've been covering here on the show, right? Where these men who are like violent criminals, mm-hmm. they're like, you know what? Suddenly I'm a woman. I want to go to a woman's prison.
Yes.
And then they're granted that wish. They get to go to a woman's prison after they violate, you know, that's.
Oh, not only that, in the state of Minnesota this over the weekend, an inmate had won a lawsuit, won almost $500,000 from discriminatory practices, what he says the state of Minnesota was guilty of. And so they have to pay him that. They have to move him to the women's prison, and they have to give him a vaginoplasty on the state's dime.
So you're paying. So Minnesota, you're paying. If you live in Minnesota, you're paying for an inmate, a violent criminal.
No, it's he was guilty of, I think, a drug crime or a felony of money or something like that. But even still, like, we're supposed to not castrate prisoners. We're supposed to not be doing that. But I guess if they identify as a woman, we can castrate them just fine.
Oh, my God.
Right.
So back to Canada, because the United States is already a failing state. Let's talk Canada, which is right there with them. So here's the article again. The number of medically assisted deaths in Canada's prisons, a concern for some experts. I love this. It's a concern for some experts. You know, maybe one person is asking a tough question.
You didn't see that one coming?
That person is Jennifer Shaw, by the way, who should be commended for asking these questions. The number of federal prisons requesting medically assistance in dying under the MAID program in Canada has increased. 27 asking for permission now since June 2016, when the legislation came into effect, and March 31st of this year. According to this information provided by the Correctional Services of Canada, the CSC, following an Access to an Information Act request. So, like their Freedom of Information Act request in Canada. They didn't make this information public. It was only after Jennifer Shaw pushed them on it to get answers, because she says there's not enough transparency here. Like, we don't know who's being put to death in prison. And yet, here's Canada, which in 1998 abolished the death penalty. Do you see a problem here? They abolished the death penalty, and they've, in fact, they struck it from all of their literature. Every piece of, like, government documents, the words death penalty have been removed.
Which is interesting.
But now you can put people to death.
People who oppose the death penalty say that there is no humane way to assist death, because we see it get botched when it happens in prison systems in the United States, where this medicine didn't work. They couldn't get the right thing. They weren't comfortable. They were, you know, seizing and suffering as they were dying for hours at a time. So why are we being told that there is just a nice, quiet, peaceful way to go? You just quietly take the medicine for some. And then in other stories, we're being told it's not possible to do humanely.
Right. Yeah. It's painful. They botch it. It's awful. But on top of it, here's one big piece of this, right? The mental illness piece of this for prisoners. So this is interesting. They say that those in Canada, specifically according to the data, that over 75%, I believe the exact number, 75% of those in prison in Canada are considered to have a mental illness.
Yeah.
So they're almost already all qualified. So if you're trying to, like, argue against this, you wouldn't be able to argue against it, because the data is on the side of the people who want to be able to put these people to death.
Well, it doesn't seem like there's a high rejection rate anyway.
No, but it's according to Jessica Shaw, who did this, you know, investigation to try to find out, it's only slightly lower in prisons. Like, there's a little bit of a rejection rate, but they're not even clear. They won't even share the data on why they're rejecting these people. Like, what specifically are you rejecting about the people that you did reject? You won't tell us.
How long till we find out that someone didn't really want this in prison?
That's what I want to... Yes, that's the real question. Because are they doing this to free up space? You know, or... I mean, who knows, right? But again, we don't know, because they won't release...
Or falsifying documents like, oh no, you know, John here, he really wanted to be put to death.
But he's not alive anymore to answer. We can't talk to John.
He signed on the dotted line, you know.
Is that his signature? We don't know. Go check his cell. He probably wrote his name all over the wall. We don't know. But we have a wait. How long until this happens in the United States? There's already laws in the works in the United States for this as well. So the United States has a massive prison overcrowding population problem. So how soon until this rolls into the United States?
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know that we'll see that because of the for-profit prisons aren't going to want to get rid of prisoners. So if they tried to do that in the U.S., they would be lobbying the hell out of that. Like, no way.
No.
Keep them there forever.
No. You know what they should do? What they should do is, in the United States, what they'll do is they'll add these private rooms like they had at the funeral home. They'll just build funeral homes into the prisons in the United States. Mm-hmm. So it'll be one-stop shopping right inside there.
Yeah.
Inside the jails and prisons. That's all they need to do. Go to the room, and here's the room where it happened. Canada, boy, Justin Trudeau, you've lost your minds. Let us know your thoughts on this in the comments below.
All right. Well, we have more to get to. We're going to tell you in a second how the United Kingdom is telling you you're free to say what you want, but they are going to watch you. Before we do, I need your power cord, please.
Okay.
You got to share it. Okay. I apologize. I came with an uncharged laptop, you guys.
Okay. Do you need...
I'm good now. All right. We're plugged in and we're ready to go. So first, before we get to that story, let me tell you about our friends at PHX Capital. With banks collapsing and the turbulent state of the stock market, millions of Americans have watched their retirement savings disappear. That's why we want to tell you about a unique investment opportunity that is not only protecting retirement savings, but investors are seeing consistent yields and growth. Phoenix Capital Group is offering high-value U.S. oil and gas investments through their corporate bonds. It's a way for people to invest in energy assets and diversify their portfolio. They are seeing yield ranges from 8 to 12% APY, paid monthly with different qualifications and maturity dates. Phoenix Capital Group is a tech-led energy company owning in some of the most lucrative basins across America. Investor capital, along with their own capital, goes towards cash flow positive oil and gas projects. They had the choice of offering a significantly lower interest rate and paying the difference to middlemen, but decided to break the mold and build stronger investments directly to investors. So these 8 to 12% APY corporate bonds are higher than CDs or annuities, often more than double the typical yields. So if you're looking for an alternative investment with sizable yields and monthly payment options, we want to recommend that you check out Phoenix Capital Group's bond offerings. So to learn more, download the free investor guide today. That's phxonredacted.com. That's phxonredacted.com. And let them know that you heard it from us, please. All right. So let's talk about free speech while we are still free to do it. The United Kingdom hired a new free speech defender through the Department of Education, but they are also spying on you. Those two pieces of news launched simultaneously this weekend, and we thought it was worthwhile to put them together because don't get too crazy about that idea of free speech. So for now, you can say what you want, but they will catch you. Here is the new free speech czar. It was announced just last week that the Department of Education has hired Professor Arif Ahmed to be tasked with investigating breaches to the Freedom of Speech Act with this new title, Free Speech Czar. I don't know. Could we have come up with a better name like Free Speech Defender? I don't know about the word czar. Anybody?
No.
Anybody?
To me,
like free speech guy.
Free speech guy?
Like guy with like several Y's.
Okay.
Guys. Anytime there's a czar, it always to me seems like an expansion of government.
Okay. Maybe. I mean, I do, you know, I think this guy has been putting his money where his mouth is for a long time. Just earlier this year, he was under fire because he invited Helen Joyce to speak at his university. Here he is earlier in the year talking about the right to offend people as a civil liberty. Listen.
A right is not a duty. A right is not something that has no consequences. A right is not something it's always or even perhaps very often a good idea to engage in. A right is just something that you can't be prevented from doing by the coercive power of the state. That's what we mean by a right. And as for offend, offence is not stirring up racial hatred. Offence is not incitement to violence. Offence is not harassment. And I do not defend the rights to do those things. The right to offence means that you can't be prosecuted and you can't be put in prison. You can in many countries, but that you should not be put in prison for doing something just because it's offensive. And the definition of offensive is in a dictionary is causing annoyance and displeasure and resentment and anger. Doing things that have those effects is not by itself grounds for being thrown into prison or being prosecuted by the state. That's what we're saying.
Okay. Now, you probably could hear that he had protesters outside of that speech because the fact that he has what's called politics by cooties. He has cooties because he was associated with Helen Joyce. Helen Joyce wrote the book Trans, and she talks about how gender ideology has this social contagion. And she speaks against the biopharmaceutical complex that is feeding the social contagion of gender ideology. So even being associated with her has given him cooties. And after he invited her to speak earlier this year, Cambridge had to apologize, or chose to apologize, for distressing students. Because again, trans activists protested the event. The dean of the school even wrote this preemptive email apologizing for even having it and discouraging people for coming. And in fact, last week when Kathleen Stock spoke, another gender critical professor, she needed bodyguards to speak at all because in the past she has said the words that men cannot be women and biological sex is immutable. And I just can't get this image out of my mind, the fact that a woman, a lesbian, has to have bodyguards for saying that men can't be women in the year 2023. That just keeps rolling around in my head this weekend.
Well, as George Galloway said, as we were talking with him last night, and he said he couldn't believe, like, that people are literally talking about ending this woman's life because of her speech.
Yeah.
Ending her life because of her speech.
Well, not because of this speech, but because the speech had nothing to do with gender, but because she exists.
Because she exists, yes. And what she stands for and what she says.
Yeah.
Yes.
Because of these talks by these gender critical women, the universities have been offering these comfort services, like, you can come, we'll talk to you, much like the Brown University event in 2013, where students were offered a room with, like, cookies and rainbows and puppies frolicking. This is now what college students need, like a nap time and a blankie. Now, Professor Asif says that he is going to make it his job to investigate people who don't get that far, who don't get to speak, who get their invitations canceled. He says this need is urgent. And he's going to be investigating any kind of breaches, such as canceling a talk on a woman's rights due to political pressure, or even disciplining a lecturer for provocative anti-monarchist tweets. It's very specific. But, you know, we do know that, for instance, someone in California at I think Santa Clara University was disciplined for giving away those gender critical chocolate bars, things like that. You know, is that his free speech to say that there are two biological genders? Is it his right or not? This is something that will be investigated now in the United Kingdom in a official government way. That guy's going to be busy. But while he's making sure British people can say what they want, the British government will be busy spying on them while they do so. Here is an investigation this weekend from The Telegraph reporting that the UK and the US government are paying a firm to, quote, ingest material from social media that they identify as problematic. Here is the firm. It's called Logically. They've received more than £1.2 million of taxpayer money to analyze disinformation and misinformation. It does this by ingesting material from more than hundreds of thousands of media sources and your social networks, using AI to identify those that are potentially problematic. The firm was started 6 years ago by a 27-year-old Cambridge student who first put it to the test during the elections in his native India. He says it deploys one of the world's largest dedicated fact-checking teams spread between the UK, Europe, and India. So, okay, do we think AI is the most responsible entity for fact-checking and disinformation, given what we've been through since the pandemic? Well, he talks about here that other blue chip clients include U.S. federal agencies. Who, I wonder?
Oh, interesting.
As an American passport holder, I'm interested. What government contracts do you have with the United States that you're ingesting social media and marking behaviors and downranking them accordingly? They also have a partnership in quotations with Facebook.
Black Swan in our chat says indigestion.
Indigestion, right.
Yeah.
You know, and they work with Facebook fact checkers, hugely influencing what people see. Here is some of the things that they're up to. Now, there's something here that I want to point out, because we saw this last week when we talked about the World Health Organization and infodemics. Well, this plays right into it. It says documents show that they had been producing regular COVID-19 misinformation reports, right, for the government. The title suggests the aim was to target posts that breached the terms of service on their platforms, but they also disclosed that they were sort of sweeping up legitimate posts by respected figures, such as this Dr. Alex DeFigurito, and the statistics and the lead at the Vaccine Confidence Project. Now, this person, this former minister, told the Telegraph, oh, that must have been a mistake, right? But he says context matters. So it matters even if something is true. The Telegraph reports that this program is sweeping up data and downranking and marking behaviors around anti-vaccine behavior and anti-lockdown behavior. And a spokesperson for this says, for this firm, Logically, says that they strongly believe in freedom of speech. They say they are not limiting it. But if you take a look here, it talks about how they can limit speech if they think it's inaccurate or wrong. But even if it is accurate, if it's disseminated in context in a way that they think will promote problematic behavior, well, who defines problematic behavior? The government does. They will then sweep it up and downrank it as well. So, you know, here we have that the governments are actively using software to track and downrank and tag users' behavior. But at the same time, they're giving lip service to free speech. So is that one step forward, two steps back? One step forward, three steps back? Because this has been going on since before the pandemic. We're just finding out about it now. So, you know, fight Dr. Ahmed for all the free speech you want. But while we do that, we'll be watching.
I'm reading this. I'm reading this as like you can say whatever you want, but you can't say what we don't want you to. So you basically you just have to want to say what we want you to, and you have the freedom to do that and
right.
nothing else.
I mean, you can like show up at universities and we'll like pump our fists in the air and be like, look, we got Kathleen Stock a podium. Yay. Right. But say what she says online and you're in deep doo-doo. That's how I read it.
Unbelievable. All right. Well, we've got more news to get to here on this. What is it? Monday?
It's Monday. We're just getting started.
Monday. We've got a lot of news to get to. We're going to talk with a billionaire who created two new schools and is on the way to create a third one here, which is anti-woke schools. So we're going to get to that interview in just a moment. But first, we've got some big breaking news on this story on UFOs. And my good friend, Leslie Kane, along with Ralph Blumenthal, have broken an amazing story over the debrief. Now, Leslie has been an amazing journalist. My friendship with her goes back years, and she is really an impeccable journalist. So here at the debrief is an unbelievable story about UFO retrievals, and an intelligence official whistleblower has come forward and admitted that the U.S. has, in fact, crashed non-human UFO vehicles and they're reverse engineering them. This is an unbelievable story. Of course, I think we already all knew this was the case, but to hear it on the record from an intelligence source who has the highest possible level of U.S. government clearance, highest possible. So let's go through this piece from Leslie Kane. A former intelligence official turned whistleblower, and I should give, and Ralph Blumenthal also wrote this piece. Let me give credit, but I know Leslie. She's amazing. Anyway, a former intelligence official turned whistleblower has given Congress and the intelligence community inspector general extensive classified information about deeply covert programs that he says possess retrieved, intact, and partially intact craft of non-human origin. So is there a bigger story at all right now? Can you think of one? The information, he says, has been illegally withheld from Congress, and he filed a complaint alleging that he suffered illegal retaliation for his confidential disclosures, reported here for the first time. Other intelligence officials, both active and retired, with knowledge of these programs through their work in various agencies, have independently provided similar corroborating information, both on and off the record. Here's the whistleblower. This is David Charles Grush, 36, decorated former combat officer in Afghanistan, veteran of the National Geospatial Intelligence Agency, NGA, the National Reconnaissance Office. He served in the Reconnaissance Office's representative of the United Aerial Phenomenon Task Force, Unidentified Aerial Phenomenon Task Force, from 2019 to 2021. From late 2021 to July 2022, he was the NGA's co-lead for the UAP analysis and its representative to the task force. There's Grush. Again, the highest level of government clearance possible. The task force was established to investigate what were once called an unidentified flying objects or UFOs, are now officially called unidentified anomalous phenomenon. They changed the name, which is part of a, you know, you can call it a PSYOP if you like. The task force was led by the Department of Navy under the Office of Secretary of Defense for Intelligence and Security. It has been reorganized and expanded into the All-Domain Anomaly Resolution Office to include investigations of objects operating underwater. Grush said that the recoveries of partial fragments through and up to intact vehicles have been made for decades, he says, through the present day by the government, its allies, and defense contractors. Analysis has determined that the objects retrieved are of exotic origin, non-human intelligence, whether extraterrestrial or unknown origin, he says, non-human, and they're not from Earth. Based on the vehicle morphologies and material science testing and the possession of unique atomic arrangements and radiological signatures, he said. In filing his complaint, Grush is represented by a lawyer who served as the original Intelligence Community Inspector General, the ICIG. And he says, Grush says, we're not talking about prosaic origins or identities. The material includes intact and partially intact vehicles. And in accordance with protocols, Grush provided the Defense of Office of Pre-Publication and Security Review at the Department of Defense with the information he intended to disclose to the debrief. His on-the-record statements were all cleared for open publication on April 4th and 6th, 2023, in the documents that were provided. Grush's disclosures and those of non-public witnesses under new protective provisions of the latest Defense Appropriations Bill signaling a growing determination by some of the government to unravel this colossal enigma with national security implications that has bedeviled the military and tantalizing the public going back to World War II and beyond. So, a lot of questions on this. He is speaking in an interview on News Nation. Let's play a little bit of that clip here, and hopefully we can hear this. You guys can fill up.
Retrieving non-human origin technical vehicles, you know, call it spacecraft if you will. It's probably not the right parlance, but no kidding.
When you say crash retrieval, what do you mean?
These are retrieving non-human origin technical vehicles, you know, call it spacecraft if you will. It's probably not the right parlance, but no kidding. Non-human, exotic origin vehicles that have either landed or crashed.
We have spacecraft from another species.
We do, yeah.
How many?
Quite a number.
When you say crash retrieval, what do you
mean? So, of course, the instant thing to say is this a PSYOP, right? Is this a PSYOP? Is this a psychological operation here to distract us, right? And this is the great question, right? How are we being played in this situation? And it's worth having this discussion. Are we being played? Why now are we hearing about this? Now, he filed this complaint, and I've reached out to Leslie Kane. I'd love to have her on because I want to go through that question. Like, is this a psychological operation? I mean, what do you guys think about this? I mean, why are we hearing about this now? And he files a complaint, and the Department of Defense signs off on allowing him to come forward with these documents.
Yeah.
Like when you work in that, you have that government clearance, you sign your life away. Like if you formerly worked at the CIA, I mean, look at the guy who's written, what's the name of those books that I love? And I can't remember his name right now. And there's a whole movie where Chris Pratt plays him on, anyone can help me out here. I've read like four of his books and I can't think of them. He was a former CIA. And a lot of the book is redacted because he mentions certain like CIA places that he can't mention in the book. So even in the book, it says redacted, like the name of the CIA safe house is redacted. Anybody know what this name of the book is? Anybody
no.
Help me out here a little bit? No.
Mm-mm.
Okay. Chris Pratt played him on. It's a big show. It's a fantastic show. Anybody?
Star-Lord?
No. Anyway, what do you guys think? Anybody else want to comment besides me?
I mean, I saw this earlier, like with the interview. So I'm interested in seeing that full interview. As far as like PSYOP, I don't know. I mean, it's nothing surprises me. You know,
is
nothing
it the Tomorrow
me,
War?
It's a terminal list, and I'm trying to think of an author's name. Why can't I? Because my brain is focused on this right now. Yeah, Terminal List, and I can't. No,
Steve
not Tom
Greer.
Anyway, no, not Steve Greer. Anyway,
who's Steve Greer?
He's a ufologist, doctor, Stephen Greer. Who? Yeah.
This is maybe a stupid question. Why'd they give us his age? That he's 36. That seems like. Do you rise up in the ranks that fast? Like, do you think people that young are working on things like this?
Yeah. I mean, look at Bob Lazar. Bob Lazar, I mean, who worked at Area 51 in, you know, in metallurgy and rocket and physics and chemical engineering was brought into Area 51 in, I think it was like 19 or something.
Okay.
In Las Vegas. So all you right. have these young, brilliant people.
I guess I sort of think that it's only like
Jack Carr. Jack Carr. That's who I couldn't think of, the author of The Terminal List. But he had so much of his books redacted. So my point is, when the Department of Defense then signs off on allowing him to come forward and they don't redact that the United States government has crashed vehicles, I just want to, I have questions. I have a lot of questions. Well, that's what the show is. We want to question things, right? I absolutely believe that that's the case. I've read a number of books. Colonel Philip Corso, who on his deathbed admitted, of course, that he was working on this, that he was put in charge of this program where they were reverse engineering these craft. Yes, of course we have craft from other worlds. Of course we do. You'd be an idiot to think we don't. Literally an idiot. And so what are we using them for? The military, Boeing, Raytheon? Of course they've been trying to reverse engineer this stuff for decades.
Yeah.
But why are we hearing about this now? That's the question. Why now? Right now, before like World War III breaks out? Like, I want to know why now.
Okay. Well,
That's what I'm on about.
So, you know, I mentioned earlier that I was reading Gilbert Doctorow's book, and he mentions a 2007 speech by Vladimir Putin to this security conference in Berlin. And John McCain was in the room, and so was Lieberman. What's his name?
Joseph Lieberman.
Joe Lieberman.
Yeah.
And he was warning about the militarization of space and that the United States is starting this nonsensical race to militarize space and that we will all lose from it, right?
Yes, yes.
And a lot of the things that he was seeing back then, and, you know, I don't know what I would have thought of this at the time, but this is now how many years ago? 14 years ago. And he was right. And now we see this, the United States starting to sort of plant flags in space. So could it be that this is a part of something that the writing has been on the wall for a long time?
Yes. And you're getting to what I've been saying here on the show. David and I have been talking before you even joined the show, like that this is the space force.
Yeah.
Like we need to have a space force. So we need a new enemy. As Jules Mufels in our chat says, they need a new enemy. Right. They need a new enemy, which is exactly what you're talking about. So we launched the Space Force. China's going to the moon. Now we need to battle them on the moon.
Yeah.
We need an enemy in alien technology, you know, and all of this. Go ahead, David.
And with an invisible boogeyman, they can get blank checks because it's like, what does it cost to fight something in space? There's no way they can figure out the amount. It's just like, we just need whatever we need.
We need whatever we need. And you can't measure it because you don't have a spacecraft to go up and see if we're building it. We're telling you we're building it. So we're going to use this now. We're going to say that they are adversarial.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to say that they're dangerous. That's what's going to happen. They're dangerous to a humanity. They're going to tell us that. And they're dangerous. And we need to start spending billions of taxpayer dollars to defend ourselves. We're going to use that as a boogeyman.
Yeah.
That's why Senator Mark Rubio is very concerned about the what are these craft doing to us? They're so far more advanced. I mean, the people that have worked on these projects who've come forward, we don't even have any technology that anyone gets anywhere close to being able to even analyze what they're made of and using. And worse, if they wanted to do something to us, they would have done it to us a long time ago. So I think it's a fascinating story. Anyway, this News Nation interview is going to happen with Elizabeth Vargas with this whistleblower. I just want to play this interview, just this little clip one more time. This is David Grush. And here he is. This is the whistleblower.
These are retrieving non-human origin technical vehicles, you know, call it spacecraft if you will. It's probably not the right parlance, but no kidding, non-human, exotic origin vehicles that have either landed or crashed.
We have spacecraft from another species.
We do, yeah.
How many?
Quite a number.
And that's Ross Coulthart. That's Ross Coulthart, by the way, also. So they put the right person to ask those questions. But yes, so we'll dive more deeply into this story. Can you tell I love talking about this story?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Yes, I do. All right.
Do you want me to respond to that? I don't have a lot of intelligence to say.
It's breaking news. And, you know, I know that they've been working on this story for quite a while. And, I'm curious, why now? Why now that we're learning about this? And,
I'm fine with it. I just want to go on record to say I'm fine with all of it. Yeah.
The one thing that kind of pisses me off about all of this is that the government cries wolf so often about everything, that everything's a danger, that there could literally be a danger and people are going to be like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
You know, we don't even get to like react properly to things.
They're like, literally they're aliens. Literally we have craft and like, whatever. And people in the chat are saying, no, this guy, I don't buy it. I don't buy it. I don't buy it. They don't believe this guy. All right. Let us know your thoughts in the chat. I'm asking you for your thoughts. That's why this is it's a two-way street. I want to hear what you guys think. You guys are very smart people who watch our show.
The thing is, my level of existential threats come mostly from global governments.
Right.
And so if there's an existential threat beyond that, like I throw my hands up. No power to like vote out alien influence. Well,
and that's what they want. They want you to start believing that it is an existential threat. And, you know, that's to our point. They're going to start raising money so that they can battle against it, you know?
Yeah.
So there you go. Anyway, we've got more news to get to here on this Monday. We do. We have a big interview in a moment. But what should we tell people about the store? Let's tell people about the store. What do you think, Philip? Let's tell people about the store.
Excuse me. I have my... my whole redacted outfit on today. So, Philip, if
David's
you can go
modeling.
Full. I got my redacted hat my rebel shirt.
Oh, you got
today,
the rebel shirt? So, welcome to the rebellion. I love that shirt. I need one.
Stand up and
I didn't get mine yet.
Rebel.
Wow. Look at that. Look at that.
I love it.
That's a handsome shirt.
Yep.
That is a handsome shirt.
Does it say, what? I forgot my tagline already. Extreme peace extremist?
No.
No. It doesn't.
Non-pacifist peace extremist.
Peace extremist. The rural juror.
All right, I'm starting to think this is not brilliant.
With the text with your face on the left of it, Natalie.
Yeah, yeah.
Non-pacifist peace extremist. Okay.
Yeah, we'll put it right in line with the I Ate My Own Placenta shirt that's coming out.
Got it.
Night Falcon in our chat says, show us the craft. Yeah, okay, let's finally see the craft. Bring it forward. Put it on friggin' 60 Minutes. Well, no one will watch it on 60 Minutes. Put it on a show that people will watch. Bring it to Redacted. I will volunteer Redacted. Bring it right here to our studio. This craft, and we'll have experts come on and try to bang it with a hammer, see if they can do anything.
All right. That sounds good.
All right. Here's our store. RedactedStore.com is the place to go. It's a great store. All the kids hang out there. They hang out and they get in trouble in front. They ask their parents, hey, can you drop me off at the Redacted store after school? It's where all the cool kids are hanging out because they've got Redacted hats, mugs, hoodies, everything else is hanging out at the Redacted store. It's RedactedStore.com. If you want to support independent journalism, you want to be a part of our community, be a part of the Rebel community. Again, we don't mark these prices up at all. We try to keep them almost at cost just to cover the printing costs. And to help support us a little bit here on the show. But again, it's a great way to show your appreciation for independent journalism and all the journalists we have on this show that aren't bought and sold by billionaires. So go to redactedstore.com to get your merch. You can try it out right now. Redactedstore.com. Well, America's schools appear to be crumbling right before our eyes, both physically and metaphorically, of course. Test scores for America's children at the lowest levels they've been in a generation. Leftist politicians seem more concerned about drag shows for children than teaching our kids algebra and English. So is there a war on America's children? That's the opinion of our next guest, Layla Centner. Layla is the chief executive officer at the Centner Academy in Miami. And she's on a mission to build schools that put kids first instead of political ideology. So far, Layla has two schools that are opened in Florida, working on a third one right now. And Layla joins us from Miami, Florida. Nice to see you, and thanks for the work that you're doing.
Nice seeing you, and thank you for having me.
So you're hiring like crazy right now. These two schools, you're hiring teachers, you're hiring staff. So there's an absolute demand right now for these schools. What made you decide to start your own schools in Florida?
Well, our original inspiration was our 2-year-old daughter at the time. She's 8 now. And we were living in New York, and we toured the best of the best schools in New York. And I looked at my husband and I said, wow. If this is the best, we're in trouble. And this is before I had any awareness of the woke insanity, the indoctrination madness that's happening today. I had no idea. It was just all the other things that I saw. You know, I'm super big into a holistic way of life. I'm big into eating very healthy, which is why we built a farm for our school. So we feed our kids farm to table, gluten-free, nothing processed, no GMOs. Which is exactly how we eat at home. The food I eat at home.
So not the government food pyramid, school lunch program garbage that we feed our children in the United States?
No, our kids have an amazing salad bar. And when we source our locally sourced meat, we make sure we call up the farmers and say, look, you say you're organic, but we want to make sure you are not giving your cows any mRNA vaccines, which, by the way, is a thing in the U.S. now, believe it or not. And organic farmers are doing this, believe it or not. So we're very, very meticulous about everything that's in our school, because what I do there, I copy at home. You know, so I built an incredible water filtration system. Our kids across the country are drinking water from their school fountains that are filled with lead and aluminum and all sorts of insane toxins, arsenic.
I'll just tell you a quick story. We lived in New Jersey, and the water in New Jersey is so bad. And I mean, toxic levels of lead, arsenic, you wouldn't believe. And the cost to put that inside of a home is prohibitively expensive, but they're not putting it in the schools, and the children are drinking that every day. So you've put that in your schools as well.
Absolutely. I anything that's in my school is good enough for me to eat and drink at home. And that's the way I live with everything that's in our school. In fact, the third campus that we're building is a fortress. You know, I have complete 5G blocking it out in every way, you know, EMF blockers in the paint, in the windows, in the floor. I've hardwired everything so that way the kids aren't sitting there with, you know, all of this 5G attacking their brains while they're trying to study. I mean, we really went all out, because it's like, these kids aren't just kids. They're our kids. We're a family. I look at every child as a child that's part of our community, part of our tribe, part of a bigger ecosystem of our future leaders that are going to be here to make this world a better place. So from head to toe, inside and out, I want their souls and their hearts and their bodies to be feeling good at all times.
You wrote a piece recently for FoxNews.com where you talked about Florida's school system and what DeSantis has been able to do at the schools there. One of the things that you were very passionate about is making sure that your teachers weren't forced to get COVID vaccines, that there wasn't any kind of mandate pushing your teachers at your schools to do that. And you've also written in this Fox News piece that you really believe that our children are under attack, that there is a war on for our children right now, this future generation. Can you describe what you're seeing?
You said there is a war. Like, my whole body got chills from my toes to my head. There is a war. When you have drag queens that look like scary monsters, real, and I'm saying this because I've seen videos of this, with little kids sitting on their laps while they're reading them stories, that is not a real world situation that we want our kids in. I mean, I'm an adult. If I saw that right in front of me, I would be scared. You know, why are we doing this to our kids? Why are we confusing them, letting them think that this is actually an option? It's just, I can't wrap my brain around it. The only thing that I keep coming to is, this is a war. It's a spiritual war. And unless we work as hard as we can work to fight back and keep the souls of our children children. They're going to sexualize them, demonize them, and just continue to beat down their self-esteem and confidence. We do the complete opposite.
Now,
we're teaching.
I was going to say, how do you do this at your schools to make sure that that woke ideology is not pervading your schools? How do you keep it out of there?
Well, our interviewer process, first of all, is extremely strict. You won't even make it past the HR lady if any of your ideologies are in alignment with the woke insanity that's happening today. So critical race theory, if you are in any way aligned with critical race theory, you're not going to get past the front door. Gender confusion, supporting BLM, obviously a terrorist organization, supporting the list goes on of everything that's out there.
So if I come in with pronouns, if I come in with they, them pronouns on my resume, would I get a job?
You won't even get a call back. You won't even. we're very strict about it. And even if they answer all the right questions the first time, they're going to get tested another 5 times before they get hired. And really, that's the only way to keep our children safe, because you have a teacher that has, 18 kids in a class, and you can't be monitoring them 24 hours a day. Yes, we have cameras, we do quality control, we do all of that. But unless you have a person aligned, you don't know what that person is going to sneak into their lesson plans. And so unless they're aligned with our value system, you'll never 100% know. But for us, because our teachers are extremely aligned, and COVID was a blessing in disguise, because it was like this, this wave that went through our school and it divided us, because we didn't even know there was this division. And the teachers who were way on that side left, and the teachers who were aligned stayed with us. And what came about was, we were all together on this. We want our kids to be kids. We want them playing with toys, playing with dolls, critical thinking, problem solving, not being forced to be in this obedient little box. We want them challenging us. We want them to love school, and we want them passionate about learning without any of this other noise of them being indoctrinated with things that should absolutely not be in a school. Look, if you're a parent and you want to confuse your child's gender, that's in your hands, not in ours. We stay away. Boys are boys, girls are girls, period, end of story. We don't want to teach a 5-year-old boy-girl sex. Why would we teach them boy-boy sex or girl-girl sex? Why? A 5-year-old should not be thinking about sex, period.
Right. Let's talk about the academics, which, of course, I talked about. The top test scores have been plummeting across the United States. Obviously, COVID lockdowns had a huge part of it, virtual learning, all of that. So I imagine the focus there has to be on academics as well, right? So absolutely. How do you make sure that that's at the top of the list?
Look, I graduated USC magna cum laude, so I obviously am a big believer in academics. But the way we teach our kids is hands-on experiential learning. So when I went to USC, my favorite classes were the classes where I got to dive into things. I got to touch things. I got to, understand at a deeper level. Rote memorization doesn't work. And so we don't teach our kids rote memorization. They do hands-on projects, because when you can touch and feel things, when you can actually understand the area of a triangle and compare it and build a house and show the area of a triangle on a house, you will truly understand what an area of a triangle means in the real world. And you're not going to forget it versus just memorizing the formula, right? And so our kids are extremely bright. At the age of 8 years old, they're already doing Shark Tanks, because we have an amazing entrepreneurship program where they are presenting their ideas in front of a group of parents, asking for money to build their business, where they're going to build their product or service and sell it in a marketplace. These are skills that I didn't get until I was in college. They're learning eye contact. They're learning charisma. They're learning emotional intelligence. They're learning real world skills. So when they graduate at 18, whether they're going to the college of their choice or they're becoming entrepreneurs, they are ready. They will be ready and equipped to handle whatever the world faces when they graduate. And as you and I know, after this COVID shenanigan disaster that just happened, we don't know what they're planning, you know, in the next 4 to 6 years, in the next 2 years. We need to make sure they're ready and equipped. So we teach them strong, try and teach them to have strong emotional skills so they can handle stressful situations. They meditate, they have breathing techniques. You know, we have a mindfulness corner. So if somebody is stressed or anxious, they can go sit there. They can have different smells. They can meditate. They can try and bring their mind to a silence and just really have those tools in their own handbag. So when life throws them a curveball, they're able to handle it without falling on the floor and collapsing from stress and anxiety, which you have seen a lot of kids experience now because of what they went through with COVID. They have PTSD and they don't know how to handle it, except our kids. Our kids are amazing. They were really, really in a bubble.
Yeah, instead of these kids throwing themselves on the floor and whining and complaining and asking you to solve their problems, like allowing them to go off. We used to do this with our kids when they were little. If you can cry, you're going to go over in the crying room. That room over there is now the crying room. You go figure it out. You go spend some time quietly, meditate, cry it out, figure it out, and then come back. And they'd always come back well-adjusted and calmed down and able to process things. I love that. I'll get you out of here on this question, which on school choice. So obviously this is a big discussion in Washington on school choice. During the national campaign, of course, Kevin McCarthy ran on this idea of the proposed Parents' Bill of Rights, calling for parents basically to know what's, you know, being taught in their children's schools, aware of like how money is being allocated. Are they spending money on drag shows or are they spending money on education and good meals for the food for their children? Should parents have a deep knowledge? Because, you know, the left has said, we don't want parents really meddling in schools. Like this will hurt America's education system if parents get their hands in the school system. What do you say to that?
Of course, that's the Rockefeller approach, right? Rockefeller designed the current education system, and he designed it to be indoctrination camps where he's spitting out just worker bees who aren't going to challenge authority. They're not going to challenge anything. And so the left does not want parents in their education system because they know they're going to disagree with what they're doing. I say, bring it on. Come. Whatever you want to know, we're open doors because we want you to know everything that we're doing because we have nothing to hide. And if you have a great idea, bring it on. We'd like to know. Help us grow and be better, because if we're aligned, which we are, your input's going to be invaluable to me. And so I love freedom of choice, and hopefully it will cause public schools to be more on their toes and not just deliver what the left side of the politics want them to deliver. They'll actually deliver what the parents want and need, because every community is different.
Well, I love what you're doing, and I wanted to be able to give voice to this. And look, if we've got any young teachers out there or older teachers that are interested in coming to work at one of your schools in Florida, you guys are hiring right now. Where's the website? Where can people go if they want to come work at your school as a teacher or other staff member?
So they can go to centneracademy.com. That's C-E-N-T-N-E-R academy.com. And we have a careers link on our website. We also have a great Instagram, Centner Academy, which shows a lot of videos of everything that we do at school. So you can go and watch the Instagram and see if it excites you. But we are looking for passionate, aligned teachers who understand this holistic way of life that we have, who understand that we want to help our kids find their passion in life. We don't want to keep them in a box. We want them to question everything. We want them to critically think. We want them to problem solve. But most importantly, we want them to love to learn.
Love that. Love that. Thank you, Layla. Really appreciate it. Good job on the two schools and continued success as you open the third and fourth and fifth and sixth schools. We need more of those. Thank you so much.
And one thing to just throw out there, we are preschool to eighth grade, but in September we are opening ninth grade to begin our high school.
Wonderful. K-12. All the way up. That's great. All the way up. Next stop is opening your own college, but we'll one step at a time. Layla, great to see you. Thank you. Great to see you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
And thank you, everyone, for joining us tonight on the show. We really appreciate it. Thanks again for subscribing. We're closing in on that 2 million subscriber mark on YouTube and closing in on that 400,000 subscriber mark on Rumble. So thank you to all of you free-minded individuals out there who are growing with us and looking for a source of news that isn't bought and sold by billionaires. We really appreciate it. So thank you guys so much for subscribing to the channel. I should mention our newsletter once again. Don't forget to subscribe to the free newsletter. It's a way for us to stay connected with you. Even if you don't want to read the newsletter, we write it every morning. We put a lot of work into it, but we've been banned multiple times across different platforms and we've been censored and taken down. And so it's a way for us to stay connected with you, to let you know where we are and how to find us. So again, you can sign up for the free daily newsletter by going to redacted.inc. It's not .com, it's .inc. Just put in your email address. You'll receive a welcome email from me, which is clayton@redacted.inc. And then just be sure to verify your email. You have to do that because it might show up in your spam folder, your junk folder, something like that. So just be sure to verify it. And then tomorrow morning, you'll receive the newsletter about 6:30, 7 a.m. Eastern time is when we publish the newsletter. And like I said, you can read it in about 5-10 minutes over your cup of coffee. And we try to bring a lot of value to your morning, covering the stories that you won't see in other places to kick off your morning. Anyway, much love to all of you guys. Thank you so much for being a part of our great community here. And we'll see you back here tomorrow at 4 p.m. Eastern time. Bye, everyone.